This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
All right, so hour number two starts like this. We've been talking about the Rockets. The NBA, and we'll get to it in a minute, has just come out and said kind of some of the things that we had mentioned about Kobe Bryant and the All-Star game coming up. The league will have has made some adjustments to the All-Star format that will be affected by the passing of Kobe Bryant and what he's meant to the league, so I'll get to those in a minute. What I did want to get to with you guys is it looks like next year the salary cap will not be going up at the level that people thought it would. And the salary cap is based amongst the profits, based on profits of the league and its teams. A lot of people are saying that the reason why the league didn't make the profits necessary to bump the cap up to where they thought it was going to be was the effect of the Hong Kong tweet from Daryl Morey and then the residual effect of how NBA in China was taken off all the channels, all the games stopped being played, the merchandise stopped being sold. They're guesstimating in certain people's tweets and some of the things they've published that Daryl Morey's tweet may have cost the league up to $200 million.
A year.
That's not a good look, right?
A year.
I just mentioned everything about just the roster itself, the team, the fact you don't have any assets to trade away anymore. You've traded away all your first-round picks, all these other things. Then you factor that in. And then also, I just want to point out, we haven't heard a single peep hardly at all from Daryl Morey since all this went down.
I'd whoop that ass if I was that. You messing with my Mandarin letters and think I'm going to let you get away? No. No.
I mean, you think about
Coach
this.
Sciarra,
if you are Tillman
so crazy.
Fertitta, if you are Tillman, you know you had to pull him in at some point and go, okay, you were done with social media for a while at least. And you need to just fade.
By the way, he tweeted an hour ago and 22 hours ago.
Daryl did?
Yeah.
About what?
About what?
He had a tweet on, he retweeted the Rockets on January 28th, 22 hours ago. United informed me my flight to Portland that I just hit 1 million miles with them. So he's just talking about his, and then update, got some gifts. Thanks, United.
So nothing on the Rockets, right?
Nothing Rockets.
But he's
nothing
still tweeting.
Publicly. You know, I'm saying, you don't hear from him. You don't hear from him. He's not doing interviews.
He just
he's
retweeted.
Not doing the radio show. He's not doing the things that he normally would be doing.
He retweeted Kelly Eco.
Oh, good for Kelly.
Look at that.
Yeah. He must have said something glowingly positive about the Rockets.
Quote, Gordon had 50 on these mother bleepers, end quote, was the beginning of the tweet.
I can see Daryl retweeting that.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's still been active
overall,
on Twitter.
Like, look, even Tillman was quick to say, and he couldn't catch it in time to do damage control to the level he'd like, but even Tillman knew that this was going to affect his other businesses, too. Because Tillman does business with Asian businesses. And from a Rockets perspective, you saw that the sponsorships right from the get-go, the Asian sponsors that they had involved with the Rockets pulled out almost immediately. That was $7 million right there.
I mean, I don't think it's impossible for Daryl Morey to get fired, but I will say that it's going to be kind of difficult for Tillman Fertitta to justify his firing based on the tweet, only because most people, from an ethical standpoint, would agree with what Daryl Morey said.
Sure.
And the fact that he had the freedom to say it.
But I'm saying the overall big picture. When you're not Les Alexander and you can't roll and reap in the benefits of whatever Daryl's done up until Tillman took over the team. From the time Tillman took over the team, Tillman's issues were major in terms of overhaul, getting the right players in here, you know, doing the right thing so that this team wins championships, stepping on the Warriors' throats, all the things that it's going to take. And we're going to do those things, he said. So I guess I throw that out to say, look, if D'Antoni's going to be your scapegoat, he can't be alone. And if you're going to do something with D'Antoni, the ideal situation, if you're not happy with Daryl, is you can just reset the deck. Kind of like the Astros. Get a coach and a general manager at the same time or close to the same time.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you harp on these draft picks, but I continue to rebut that with I've never felt like picks outside of the top 3 to 5 in the NBA are important other than if you want to make moves with them.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Really?
There's a lot of – I mean, look, man, even second-round picks, you can look at some of the recent second-round picks and realize
– I'd love to see the career length on average of a player drafted after 6.
Oh my God. Okay. Draymond Kawhi Green Leonard. Was end of first round.
Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard was Tom out of the
Brady,
lottery.
Tom Brady was the, what, seventh round pick. I get it. Those are always going to be there. I get
Marcus
it.
Marcus Morris.
I get it. But tell me the last big draft pick that the Rockets have had in any round that has panned out.
Well, Marcus Morris was out of the lottery or right at the end of the lottery. Marcus Morris still playing. Patrick Patterson, another guy that they passed on better talent for, but Patrick Patterson drafted in the same exact spot. He's still playing. I mean, there's guys that have long careers. Just because you weren't drafted in the lottery.
But they're not going to solve – they don't solve a team's – their depth at a lot of times. Those guys are depth picks. They're the fourth
– what is the Rockets lacking?
They're
right
the fourth
now?
Or fifth best player on the team picks. They're not franchise
defining.
But you're not bad
enough to get to that point, but and I'm you're not winning the lottery.
The NBA has always been a team that you get better through free agency, and you add depth, and you add superstars through trades and free agency. And now, so if your point is you don't have them to make trades with, that's one thing. But I don't think you build teams necessarily in the NBA like you do in the NFL through the draft.
How do you – I mean, okay.
I just don't
LeBron rebuilt the Cavaliers by being the number one overall pick.
That's LeBron. I said the top after the fifth or sixth pick.
Ja Morant has changed the entire – I mean
yeah. – And where was he picked?
Top three.
Okay, that's my point. Anything after six isn't going to change your franchise. On occasion it does, but not consistently.
Okay. So if you're – I always said this too. The NBA draft more than any others is based on potential because the kids come out way too soon now, or they're one and done, or they're high school playing overseas for a year. And then you've just – general managers get fired on potential too. But you're drafting on potential. It's not the slam dunks that it used to be when you had a draft that featured LeBron and Carmelo and D-Wade and all those guys. I get that. But at the same time, you can get better and build depth and get quality players that are going to be maybe not your first – Kyle Kuzma is the third option on the Lakers. A damn good team. And he's the third option, but he was drafted at the end of the first round.
I get it. Chandler Parsons.
Draymond Green.
I'm telling you that those are the exceptions and not the norm. How many – what is there, 30? I always confuse how many teams are in 32. Each sport. There's because 30 and 32. And can we just put 32 in all the leagues so I don't have to get confused? So there's 32 teams. That means there's 32 picks. That means 6 through 32. Yeah, there's going to be guys in there that end up being pretty good, but it's not 6 through 32. In the NFL, there's more guys that are good 1 through 32 than are bust on average in the first round of the draft in the NFL, year in and year out. Mm.
I could not disagree more.
I don't think so.
I'm just telling you. In the seventh round, it's different. But to me, the third round of the NFL draft, I'm talking about as a whole. When you look at draft picks, what are the valuable draft picks in the NFL?
You're telling one me through you three. Think the first what round are the picks valuable... at the end of the first round in the NFL are going to be more productive and more valuable than first round picks after 6 or 7 in the NBA?
I'm telling you on average that first and second round picks in the NFL mean more, have more value, and end up producing more for their teams throughout their career, as short or as long as it may be, than 6 through 32 picks in the NBA.
Ginobili was in the 50s.
Why do you think
Parker
there's only two rounds?
Oh, Ginobili, Tony Ginobili Parker, was in Clyde Drexler.
Again, you guys aren't listening. You're just saying that I'm saying that it's 100%. I realize those guys exist. What I'm telling you is that I don't feel like on a pick in and pick out basis, year over year over year, if you pick a guy at 15 in the NBA draft, that he's going to be a stud superstar.
Kawhi Leonard. Okay, I get it. You're doing the random picks. I will pull the draft. Drafts for you. For
oh,
the
dude,
last
it goes on.
10 years.
Steve Nash.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant.
It's
Joe
unbelievable.
Dumars.
The players from beyond.
So you're telling me a 20th round pick in the NBA is worth just as much as a first round pick in the NFL? Is that what you're telling me?
Depends on where it's picked. Because from the NFL, I could do the same thing and tell you how many busts there were in the NFL in the first round.
And I could do just like you are and telling you how many guys in the first round have been superstars and studs.
But I'm not making
and then
that
the seventh round
is
the Tom Brady.
I'm not making the statement you are.
I'm just telling you, NBA draft picks to me aren't as important to building a team like they are in the NFL.
Then why does Sam Presti, when he's blown up the Thunder, want nothing but first
round
picks?
No, I get it. The Celtics did that. How many championships does that translate into?
Do you think the Celtics would be this good right now?
How did the Big Three – they went out and got the Big Three and the Celtics to win their championships. The Heat did the same thing. The Cavs, the Lakers are doing it now. Every team's getting big two, big three studs. They're not going, well, we got to draft two guys in the first two rounds, and we're going to be in the championship. That's not how the NBA works.
Yeah, it is how the NBA works, because if you look at it now, the Miami Heat now, all they've done is stockpiled enough draft picks, and guess what they've done? They found diamonds in the rough. They drafted the right way. Bam
Adebayo. And
they went
out and got Jimmy Butler to lead all that.
So what? I mean, you still can go out and do the piece here, the piece there, or get a guy, a guy.
Even Butler was picked like 30. He was a low pick. He was a first round pick, but he was a low pick.
All right. Are we going to do this the whole show where you guys tell me that there's guys picked out of the top six?
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
I'm just taking the other side of the discussion.
I don't need a specific pick because for every one of those, I can talk about every one that didn't. And there's going to, trust me, I'll win that battle if we want to go through every draft over the last 20 years, six through four.
Your comment was after 3 to 5, they're really not that important. That's what you said.
Yeah. Well, okay. So
that's completely not true.
So 5 to 6.
It is important. Picks 10, 15, 20, those are important picks. That's just, okay. I could not disagree with you more, man.
That's fine. I mean, you guys can disagree with me. I don't care about that. I'm just saying, if you're giving me an individual pick, I can pull that up and do the same thing. I was giving you some
in the teens, some in the 20s, some in the second round. But I can tell you that because the draft is shorter and the picks are more important, the percentages are really good about first round picks in the NBA having pretty decent lengthy careers.
There's also a reason why if you get picked in the first round, I believe you're guaranteed a 3-year deal. Like if you're a rookie that's drafted in the first round, you're guaranteed a contract that you're not otherwise guaranteed in the other round.
But here's my
Emmanuel Mudiay was seventh pick in the draft.
Okay,
how's he doing? Is he a stud?
He's still in the league.
Oh, is he really changing the franchise that he plays for?
Barry, I don't even know his damn name. You don't draft anymore and think that every guy that you draft is going to be the franchise player.
Stanley Johnson was picked 8th. How's he doing?
He's still in the league.
At the 8th pick. Worth it.
You're okay.
But I'm just doing what y'all were doing.
We're not going anywhere with this, so just forget it. But what I'm saying is when you're saying picks don't matter and they don't have value, and they actually do, because then if they don't, then as a general manager, Nick, you don't have to be the head coach. You should just be the GM. Because all you can do is just roll the dice and go, God, I sure hope someone gets bought out this year.
Stanley Johnson's averaging 1.4 points a game this year. He was picked 8th in the draft. So I'm just doing what y'all were doing when you're telling me that the 30th pick is just as valuable as the top 5.
Weigh them all. Weigh all the eighth, all the pick, the number 8 picks.
Well, I don't
weigh them all. Okay, but I'm just saying, then weigh them all. Because I'll tell you right now, you're not going
to
be happy.
So do I need to lower my number to the top, outside of the top 10? Is that what it is? Because I'm just telling you, draft picks don't mean as much in the NBA. Teams aren't built through the draft as like they are in the NFL. That's my point. The value of these draft picks, you say Daryl Morey doesn't have? It's not the same as if it was the NFL. That's my point. We're getting hung up on the nuance of the number I gave.
No one's getting hung up on it. We're going to continue to roll on. It's hour number 2, 3-hour show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Roll through number 2, 3-hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5, as we were having a spirited discussion about the NBA draft, assets, how teams call me either Barry Bayless. Build a title or
Barry Bayless.
Somebody goes, okay, Barry Bayless.
What Daryl can do to try to improve the team.
I got my fresh kicks on. What do they call him? Swag?
Who?
Skip Bayless. They call him. I don't know.
They call him something that has to do with swag?
Well, swag.
I call him a lot of names that probably aren't suited for air.
I'll say him the same, and I'm not calling him swag. Don't you dare disrespect me by calling me Skip Bayless, sir, on the text line. You can go to hell for that.
All right, Skip. Getting back to the discussion. Skip.
If I'm Skip, you're Shannon.
Skip, let's get back to the discussion. Because I could not disagree with you more about what you're saying about the NBA, Skip. Because in the draft, you get so many good players that could help you. And by the end of the day, Skip, they're going to be role players. They're going to be good players. I don't care if they're going to be a superstar player, Skip. I'm waiting to hear from you, Skip.
Well, I don't know how to do a Skip Bayless. I just say flamboyant things.
Just say stupid things. Well, yeah. No, never mind. I'm just
saying.
Just
talk how you did in the last
segment. You had it covered. Don't worry.
I hate y'all.
I mean,
oh, boy.
Look, and you could pick any different draft. And honestly, yeah, I know. People,
you're
we're
gonna
not
pick
Shaq
2013.
And Charles. No, I told you that during the break.
Yeah.
The one draft that was completely weighted the opposite you would think is, in 13, the top of the draft was awful. And the bottom of the draft, I'll just give you the number one overall pick with Anthony Bennett. Arguably the worst number one pick of all time.
Oh, I don't.
Oh,
we're going to argue about that too?
Yeah, because Kwame Brown had a career in the league. Anthony Bennett was on your roster this year at the start of the season.
Yeah. He played 4 years in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. Okay. Especially for the number one pick.
So when you look at this, the top, out of the top 10, you had Trey Burke, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope still playing, Ben McLemore, Nerlens Noel, Alex Lynn, Cody Zeller, Otto Porter, Anthony Bennett, and one good one.
Victor Oladipo.
Victor Oladipo.
Yeah.
Okay. But in the second half of that, when you start looking at Steven Adams, Giannis, Dennis Schroeder.
You're skipping a lot, though.
But I'm saying
you skip Shabazz Muhammad.
Right, but I even omitted 10, which is CJ McCollum. You went to 6 or 7 or 8, but I'm just saying.
Well, okay, so do I need to move my number? Would that make it outside of the top 10?
No, because as you go down,
I just don't feel
27
like...
was Rudy Gobert.
Okay. Cool. A guy that gets a lot of blocks.
He's an all-star.
Yeah.
24, Tim Hardaway Jr. Playing good ball for Dallas.
Good ball. We're talking championships.
He may be their third best player.
We're talking championships. I'm talking about, again, let me reiterate what my point was, because we're getting bogged down in the nuance of it. My point was, because you said Daryl Morey doesn't have the draft picks.
The assets,
which are draft picks. You said draft picks specifically to make moves to make this team better. And I submit to you that you don't need draft picks because the value isn't as important in the NBA to use draft picks as opposed to free agency. And in your case, you've even said this, the buyout market is where you can really do some good for your team without the requirement of a draft pick, because I don't think the draft picks hold the same value as they do in the other sports. That was all my point was, and I threw out a number, and if I need to move my line on that number, I'm willing to do that.
You could move it, and it still wouldn't change my opinion.
Mine
about
either,
it.
That's because fine. You look at the end. I mean, look, I'm looking at 20.
Somebody texted and said there's two teams that built through the draft that were championship contending teams, and they're absolutely right. Dallas and Golden State. And I concede the floor on the Golden State thing. 1,000% built through the draft, and if that was the only thing that I could, you know, base my argument against, I'd be 100% wrong. But think about how many teams have made championship runs by not building through the draft and bringing in free agent superstars and giving them money or doing it through trade.
I think the problem here, though, is that if you have pick 18 overall in the first draft and he becomes your second or third best player, that's not that to me is value. I think you're confusing the fact that, oh, past 3 or 5 is not important because you can't get a championship type of player on your team or a player that can lead you to a championship. When you pick 18, 19, 20, 23, you're not necessarily picking the guy that's going to be built. Your team is going to be built around that one guy.
You're picking the franchise player, but you're playing a very,
thing,
very key role player.
The other last point I'll make on this, and you can have the last word on this, Barry.
I don't need the last word.
Is that guys that are picked lower have a chip on their shoulders. That's the reason why guys like Draymond Green literally remembers every single player that was picked before him, because he was angry. He was mad. And that's what happens to a lot of these players. Kobe Bryant, a lot of these. I think it was either Parker or Ginobili that was picked 57.
Ginobili was in the 50s.
They played with a chip on their shoulder. And just because you pick somebody after 3 or 5, maybe that person, that player is not going to lead you to a championship, but he's going to be a contributing factor. He might be the 3rd, 4th, 5th best player. He might even be a bench player.
I think that's the key, though. I think when looking at this, there's a couple of just terms. They may not win a championship, but there's a lot of really good players that are on championship caliber teams. You look at the whole Celtics team. They haven't won it, but almost every guy was drafted and groomed, and they finally did go out, and because they lost their guy in Kyrie Irving, they went out and signed point guard from UConn, Kemba. But overall, when you look at, they drafted Jaylen Brown, and they drafted Tatum, and they drafted these guys. I mean, Capella's 25th. Bogdan Bogdanovic, 27th. You can go up and down the list and say, look,
and I can do the same thing when Nick said at 18, the year that you said was so great, it was Shane Larkin. So again, we can play that game. There's going to be hits and misses all the way through the draft.
Playing the percentages, though, Barry, with the numbers you gave, I think that's the key. whether they won a championship
Gorgie
or not.
Dang?
Gorgie Jang. He's still playing for the Timberwolves, plays good minutes.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. He
like,
was 21st.
You're looking for everybody to be a LeBron
a star.
In their 20s.
Yeah, that's the
yeah,
problem.
And that's not going to happen. But, you know, if you look at Bogdanovich, if you look at Hardaway Jr., look at some of these guys, they may be one of the top three players on the roster. They're getting minutes. They're playing.
Okay.
All right.
I'm giving you the last word.
No,
I'm not going to be like that.
I'm going to be like, I don't need it. It's just we obviously agree to disagree. So regardless of whatever happens, the Rockets are not in a very good position right now because they're not playing good basketball, and I don't know what trades what they have that they can you can trade to get it. So we'll see what they do next. They're coming back home. They're playing one of the teams you just mentioned, the Dallas Mavericks. And that's going to be a heck of a big matchup because Dallas isn't going away, and they've been playing good basketball, and we all know they have Luka Doncic. So we'll see how that goes as they start a three-game homestand. We're at the halftime point of the show, so we're going to put the first half to bed, maybe, and we'll get ready for the second half. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Right now, I do want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. If you've realized recently with all the rain that you've had a leaky roof, or you've just been thinking about putting a new roof on your house, there's only one place to go, and it's Fitz Roofing. They're fantastic. They're locally owned and operated, so they're not going to be like deposit thieves and storm chasers taking your money up front and then doing really bad work, and you can't get them to finish the job or do it right. These people are dedicated to Houston. They use the best product in the business, CertainTeed shingles. So much so, they're a CertainTeed Select Shingle Master company. Only 1% of the roofers in the U.S. meet the criteria to get that status. You need it. They got it. You go to Fitz. Simply put, their base warranties longer and better than your average roofer. And their ratings are fantastic. A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau. 5-star ratings on Facebook and Home Advisor. And you can check them out without paying a dime. All you got to do is call 832-521-3001 and set up a free no-obligation inspection today. They come to you, tell you what they can do. They go away. You want them to come back, you pick up the phone, call them back. They do fantastic work, and they finish what they started. 832-521-3001 or FITZRoofing.com. Fitz Roofing, making a difference. One home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
90 in the books, 90 still to go in the show. Second half starts now on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Appreciate you taking us along for the ride, wherever you may be in Houston today. I did want to mention on the basketball front, because a lot of ideas were kicked around that the NBA obviously listened to. When talking about what to do for the All-Star game this year in terms of honoring Kobe Bryant, the final jersey number will be something this year's NBA All-Stars play to reach. So evidently, they're not going to go with one squad wears 24s, the other one wears 8s. Both NBA All-Star teams will be playing for Chicago-based community organizations as selected by their captains Giannis and LeBron. The teams are going to play 3 mini games. 3 12-minute games, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, all starting 0-0 and playing to the finish. The winners of those quarters will get a cash amount to go to the charities, okay? At the start of the fourth quarter, remember we talked about this every year, they had that tournament in the summer called the $1 million. It's something where the all the teams, amateur, ex, pro players, whatever, they play for like $1 million, $2 million, and they set the final score based on in the fourth quarter, they go, it's 73-72, right. So first one to 94 wins or
right,
whatever.
Right.
So at the start of the fourth quarter, the game clock will be completely turned off and a final score target will be set. It'll be determined by taking the leading team's total cumulative score through three quarters, then adding 24 points, the 24 representing Kobe's uniform number. Once that is set, the teams will play an untimed fourth quarter until the first team reaches the final target score to win the game.
This is so confusing already.
It really is.
I am so confused. It's not changing my mind to watch it at all either.
The community organizations selected by the winning team's captains for the first three quarters will receive $100,000, a total of $300,000, $100,000 for each quarter, donated to charities for those three quarters. The winner of each of the first three quarters will be the team with the higher score at the end, obviously. The winning team in the All-Star game, i.e. the team that reaches that target goal in the fourth quarter, gets $200,000 for a designated charity. So essentially, you're talking about $500,000 in money going to charity, with the entire concept based on Kobe and 24 and
I like it.
All these other
that things. Part is cool.
You know what that sounds like, though? Like, you know when you, like, learn a new game and they tell you all the rules before it, but you really didn't understand what they were saying, and you really don't learn the game until the game actually happens?
It's the
That's
XFL.
What that sounds like.
Like hockey.
It's the XFL.
Hockey?
This year, because the XFL with all the different possible extra points and
But at least there's the basis of football in the XFL, so you know you can't jump off sides, pass interference, what is holding. You know, what's a score, a touchdown, whatever. This, I'm so confused.
Yeah, it was called the basketball tournament that they play every year.
Oh, yeah.
And it's gone up to like $2 million winner take all. But they do that. In every game, the final score and who wins is determined by, in the fourth quarter, they say, okay, once you reach a certain point, first one to this score wins. And obviously, a team that's been leading for three quarters has an advantage. Mm-hmm. But
I think one idea that we talked about a lot was, you know, one team playing with the number 24 and then the other team play with eights. But then I was thinking about it yesterday and I was like, you know what? That would be confusing. And that's probably why they wouldn't do it, because the ref has to, like, if there's a foul committed, he has to say the number, right? So he's like, foul on number 24. Well, which 24? The shooting guard, the center?
Well, we brought that up earlier in the week. Somebody brought it up when I suggested. What did I suggest?
Eights and 24s, right?
Well, it was something else, but it had to do with, I think maybe it was the All-Star game or something, but keeping the numbers the same. But somebody said it would be difficult to keep track of fouls.
Did they come up with like an idea to?
Yeah, but you just have in the box score, you just have the name next to their number. There you would just, the referee would give the name, foul on 24. Yeah.
And for an All-Star game, it doesn't matter.
And Dedekumpo. And then you would just put a tick mark next to Giannis. Okay, that's a foul on him.
Because it's a lot, they obviously ref the game a lot more loosely in the All-Star game.
They're not going to foul anybody out.
Who's calling a foul in the All-Star game anyways, right? If you do, they eject the referee.
If it's egregious, they'll probably call it. But even traveling violations and all that stuff, they're even more flippant than they would be when they're scrutinized for
every
call.
Oh, they'll joke about it. Like, you might have took an extra step.
Oh, speaking of that, and I don't want to get us too off track, but it involves basketball in the Rocket game last night. Did you notice when Eric Gordon got teed up? Were you watching that sequence?
I believe I was,
I was not.
The Rockets had, and I feel like the Rockets are notorious for this. Not that it's not a league-wide issue, but the Rockets are notorious complainers, I think.
Oh, EG always looks like someone took his lunch money.
Yeah, I mean, Russ gets a lot of texts because he talks a lot. James is always looking for a foul and complaining. Well, I forget the name of the official, but he teed up Eric Gordon last night. Mike something. He teed up Eric Gordon last night after Eric Gordon got a foul called on him. And all Eric Gordon did was kind of just motion to his head like, what? Like he typically does. And the ref just immediately, boop, tee. And you could see Eric Gordon say, I didn't even say anything. And as plain as day, you could almost hear it, but the referee looked at him and goes, I'm sick of it. I have had enough. You guys stop complaining. I'm sick of it. And I thought, oh, well, good for him.
So he's saying, you know what? I don't care if it's the wrong call.
Yeah, I'm tired of y'all barking and yapping and crying and all in my face and my ear. D'Antoni was doing it the whole game. He basically just teed up Gordon and said, nah, I'm done. No more complaining the rest of this game. I'm sick of it. And I applaud him for that. Because you put yourself in the position of an NBA referee.
Oh, man.
Would the three of us have the same patience that they do? I'd be trying to fight players as much as they complained. I'd be like, let's go. Take this whistle off. Let's do this. I'm so sick of you, like, crying. Like, I don't know how they do it.
But at the same time, you get paid pretty decent as an official, right? But
I don't know how they do it, though. Oh, my God. I wouldn't have the patience to be an NBA ref.
Okay? As long as you're going to have human nature and human beings as referees,
yep.
You're going to have human nature play a role. Because I've told you guys forever, and I can rattle these names off because I know them by heart, there were three officials that guaranteed every time they get a Rockets game, you're going to get screwed or feel like you're getting screwed, because they're not just going to call the game clean slate, starting from scratch, both teams fair shot. They remember, and they remember everything. Tony Brothers is one of them. Scott Foster, obviously, with what we've seen recently with Chris Paul, James Harden, and others, is another one. There's several that you can go up and down. Derek Stafford's not in the league anymore. He hated Kevin McHale, and it went over years. And you, for you to tell me, oh, he's over that. the hell he is.
They're
and he doesn't
human.
Forget. And it's the same thing with complaining. That you basically, when you're near the courtside, and until they moved us up in radio, you got a lot more of this where you'd hear the feedback. But time and time again, you would hear from officials, do you ever think you've committed a foul? Because there are guys, and Eric Gordon's one of them, and someone on Twitter went back and showed highlights of every time he's been called for a foul. Every time he gets called for a foul, literally, you'd think he got shot by a sniper and then someone took his lunch money.
He runs off. He's like, oh, my God, I'm going to foul. Like, bro, like, you foul people.
I mean, my whole thing is, though, if you get paid well, that kind of, and you're probably forewarned about the complaints that you're going to get. I mean, to a certain extent, you shouldn't be able to affect the game if it really wasn't a technical foul. I just feel like that's unfair. I think the other thing is when players do bad, we complain as fans, and they have to take it. When we say Eric Gordon sucks, guess what? He has to hear all of that.
Oh,
people lose their jobs. Players get traded. They get released.
Look, we're
because
in radio,
of what we complain.
Say, people say we suck. People text the show. They hate us individually as a show, whatever. So I get that, but what I'm saying is every day if we went and complained to somebody about something, eventually they're going to get sick of it. Or every day,
that's true.
If someone texted the show and was legit, not just messing with us like LU Dillon does you or whoever messes with me or Joel or whatever, but just legit was a jerk to you every day nonstop, you get sick of it and call them out. And in the ref's case, he gets sick of it. He has the right. If there's too much complaining, just be like, nope, you were too demonstrative and showed me up.
And
that's
it's a part of the referee's job to control the tone of the game.
But it'll get rescinded. Right. I'll tell you this. The Rockets lead the league, and here's to your point, but not just with the officials. It's the boy who cried wolf theory, right?
Yep.
This is why when they found out that the Rockets sent an 81-page report to talk about how all these calls went against them in Game 7, that people had no sympathy for them. The reason why I'll tell you, Nick, it'll probably be rescinded is because no one sends more tapes to the league than the Rockets that will say he didn't deserve to get this technical. And then they won't fine him and they'll rescind the technical. You won't ever hear about it, but it can be rescinded. But overall, it doesn't change the reputation that from a league perspective, they're tired of the Rockets bitching about everything all the time. I can't tell you, like on a daily basis, there are Federal Expresses after every game going out about every call and every little thing. And they're like, did it determine the outcome of the game?
I mean, look, you're the biggest star on this team flails about mid-jump shot to draw calls and then complains when he doesn't get it. As opposed to just playing. Because I watch the other team when I see the Rockets being overly whiny and crybaby about fouls. And yeah, other players in the league do it. But it just feels like, man, there's this big difference. I don't see another star. And maybe I'm wrong. And correct me if I am. But is there another star that flails about and flops like James on a three-point shot as consistently and as often as he does? I know guys do it on occasion to draw the foul. But it seems like James does it a lot.
I think he does it the most behind the three-point line. But in terms of flops in general, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of players that are up there with him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But I'm just behind talking about the three-point line, I mean, a flop's a flop.
But I'm just talking about, like, and then it's egregious, and then he's running down the court with his hands in the air, and it's like, bro, just follow through, shoot your shot. If it's a foul, they'll call it.
Run it back down.
Well, loafing back down the court.
When he's done bitching at the refs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm glad that they did it. I was like, thank you, just play some ball. If you want to, and here's the beautiful thing about it. There was a case, it was on the Blazers, and it wasn't CJ McCollum, it was somebody else, but it was a legit foul. And he fouled somebody. And he went to complain, and he turned around and looked at his coach, and they even said on the broadcast, he won't complain and ask for a review because he knows he fouled him. That is the one thing that has limited it. As long as there's a review on the table, you notice these guys aren't going to Mike D'Antoni and saying, I didn't foul him, review it, because they know once they do, they're going to be caught in the fact that, yeah, you did foul him.
Well, the other thing that I'll say is that I'm going to give him credit for, because Matt Bullard's awful about this. Craig is good at this. Finally. Is when you show, like, the offensive foul on Russell Westbrook that was first where it was a defensive foul and they reviewed it, Craig right off the get-go was like, that probably should have been a foul on Russ. Because they, believe me, they're getting in their ear and on their phones and text messages. You know, that was a legitimate, Russ got hammered. You can't say that. But you know what? The film doesn't lie. When they run the replay from four different angles and you see Russ completely extend a stiff arm.
Yeah. He did get fouled, but after he pushed off.
Yeah, so from a credibility standpoint, at least Craig was able to go, nah, you know what? He probably, that's probably going to be reversed.
Yeah. Just stop crying so much, Rockets. Y'all got enough to worry about.
Man, I'm telling you. All right. So we're rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show.
I love you so much for that.
More.
You know, you can't play that without me just losing it hysterically. I think that is the funniest thing ever.
There you go. I want to thank Daryl Morey for joining the show. And we've got more to go. It's the usual suspects, damn. ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We've been talking a lot about basketball. We might as well wrap it up. But there was a fight last night in the NBA.
Yeah.
Ooh, it was a little juicy.
I like it.
The Grizzlies way up on the Knickerbockers in New York in the Garden. Sidebar, by the way, they were chanting sell the team. James Dolan, if one fan would do that, he'd have you banned. I don't think you can ban the entire arena.
He's trying.
That's been the consistent theme. So fans not happy in New York. Knicks getting their ass handed to them by the Grizzlies. So at the end of the game, Jay Crowder rushes up a shot. It gets loose ball. He picks it up. All he's got to do is run out the clock. You're way up. He goes to shoot a three.
Yeah. So he got the steal, which we discussed earlier in the week. You didn't need to go for the steal that late in the game, but okay. So then he gets the steal. Yeah.
Instead of just running clock, then he loads up from three, and Alfred Payton's like, nope, we're not settling for that, and drills him in the chops, right in the middle of the chest, knocks him down, to which he kind of pops up, and as you mentioned when we kind of reviewed the film several times, he kind of half swung.
He did. Crowder half swung at him, for sure.
I got to tell you, though, and you know this, I've lost a ton of respect for Jay Crowder. I thought Jay Crowder was a true tough guy.
He
did not look like a tough guy last night.
No, he didn't look like he wanted any part of anybody on the Knicks squad that wanted to fight.
Enter one of the greatest mid-round picks in NBA draft history, Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris, the one-time Rocket, comes in. He will fight anyone.
At any point.
And he comes in, and guns blazing, he wants a piece of just about anybody. All hell breaks loose. Both teams are on the floor. Everybody's going at it.
And Crowder
Jay
is kind of hiding.
Who's got like an offensive line. He waited for all of his teammates to get in front of him. I'm like, no, that's not the Jay Crowder I know.
Do you think it's because he knew he was wrong in doing what he did, being up, what was it, 127-106?
Yeah,
and he jacked up a three? I mean, bro, literally 21.
But you still, from a manly perspective, you can't look like that.
So he looked like he swung, but it was a half-assed swing push. What was the dude's name?
Alfred Payton.
So Payton wanted all that smoke and more.
Which shocked
me. He's the one that shoved him. They looked like they were going to go at it, and he was pointing to Crowder and pointing to the tunnel. Like, let's go over there. Meet me in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And let's finish this out there. And Crowder was very subdued and
good for Alfred, though, because he's only 25.
Yeah.
He was almost fake
but
tough.
Almost too quiet, as in like, oh boy, I don't want none of this. Nope.
You in the past, Jay Crowder's a guy that wants to get in everybody's ass.
So bark back a little bit, right? Bark back. Yeah. But apparently, unbeknownst to me and you, I guess, and everybody else, he's soft. And Marcus Morris was going to let us know that. Unfortunately, he chose the wrong words to say.
I don't think it's a build-up, man. I think dude is just, he played the game in a different way. Like, he just, a lot of female tendencies on the court, flopping and throwing his head back the entire game. And like I said, man, it's a man's game, man. You just get tired of it, man. And then, obviously, at the end, I was very unprofessional. They win the game. It's a good team. And, he does stuff like that, man.
When you say unprofessional, are you referring to the steal at that point as a kind of code that you don't go for those plays late like that?
No, the steal was cool. You got the steal. It is what it is. But when you step back and shoot a three, and try to, rub it in that they're winning, It's just unprofessional, man. It's soft. His game is soft. He's soft. It's just, you know, it's how he carried it, man. And, you know, it's just very womanlike.
See, he was good until the very end.
No, I well, think the two female different tendencies, and I didn't know. Somebody tweeted me, was like, so is this what we're getting fined for because he said female tendencies? And I didn't know the context of it because I hadn't seen it. And so I watched and I was like, oh, you know exactly what he's doing. He's trying to imply through the use of clever wording that he thinks Crowder is gay without using the F word.
Well, I didn't get that. I don't get that. Yeah. I get that he's the P word. I get that he's the P word.
That's what I get.
No, he's got a lot of female tendencies. He's flopping about, throwing his head back. He's saying he's being sassy and flamboyant and overly dramatic. And I felt like, because when I did it, Sigmund Bloom was like, very astute observation. I feel like that may be what was the case here. So I'm just saying, like, because he can't come out and go, that dude is gay. That dude was acting gay.
But he didn't even use sassy or flamboyant incorrect. Or anything
I think
like
he
that.
I think he was basically saying he's the fake tough guy. He's the P word.
But then he said acting like a woman. And it could be the P word, but to me it sounded like he was trying to question his sexuality.
And what I was saying, too, is that you could have gone with just
as
the
guys
end of,
tend to do with other guys.
Yeah, the end of his last quote there. You could have just said he's soft, yeah. He's soft, soft, soft. But then you go woman-like and female tendencies, yeah. And that's just going to put it over the top. And believe me, it did. And the reactions came, and they came swiftly. And women were not happy, and everybody was going after him. He finally came back and apologized, did Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
But I don't think he took back any of the sentiment that he meant towards Jay Crowder.
I think
it was he knew he used the wrong term.
Yeah, and he did. He said, I shouldn't have used those words, and you know, I champion women and all those things. And I don't think he is backing off of the fact that Crowder is a soft, fake, tough guy.
But do you think it's funny that he said he was okay with the steal but not the shot? Like, what did you think he was going to do with the steal? Like, I don't
just
understand.
Run the clock out.
Yeah, just not let them run the clock out. It's almost like mushing somebody in the face. Like, give me the ball. Like, we got this.
You don't understand why you don't go for the run.
And there's a couple
that
other.
Too, I mean, it's a good point, but I don't know. And just like, give me the ball. A
couple other things to unpack here. We were listening to the video we had gotten sent was Pete Pranica and Brevin Knight on the Grizzlies broadcast, who could not have condemned the Knicks more for the hard foul and completely avoided the real point, which was your guy shouldn't have been shooting a three up 20.
Called it Bush League for him to push him down. That wasn't Bush League.
No, he deserved it. That's old school. Speaking of Bush
that was
League
old school.
And old school, the final say in the whole matter, the Knicks in the Garden, because Ja Morant tweeted, we went to take showers after the game, three droplets of cold water, we couldn't get the hot water, heck, we couldn't even get water. That is such an old school team move.
The Knicks just cut the water off.
Cut everything off.
Y'all want to go for three more points with a second left up 21? Nobody showers.
Go find a shower.
That's not
how you feel. Not how you feel. Should have just went for the steal and walked off.
I get the mental warfare before the game.
After though,
but after,
go to the
why
club
are you tripping?
Now. Yeah, go to the bars in New York now, stinking like ass, because that's what's going to happen. No one showers. How about that?
Because like
that's
back
so
in the day,
funny.
Oh, and even now, I think University of Michigan, the road team, Harbaugh found this out. So the road team's locker room is pink because it's the most subdued, relaxed color you could have for the locker room because they did this whole study. And then back in the day, in the Garden in Boston, and even in Milwaukee, they used to put the visiting team locker room near all, where all the water, the heaters were, and they'd crank it up to ungodly levels. So when you went in the locker room, you just sweated your ass off every time you were in there.
Nice.
Or you were like other places, you were freezing cold.
That's 80s NBA warfare.
Yeah,
huh? Love
sure
it.
Sure was.
Dr. Dre on 290 said, I think female tendencies translates to he's a biatch. So just come out and say that. You can say that. You'd be like, yeah, I think Crowder's a bitch. He plays like...
He might get fined for that too, though, right? For saying calling someone a B word.
But that's I mean, honestly, if we're talking about this, that's a female dog.
Yeah, but you don't think the NBA would fine him for something like that?
We're a dog friendly show, by the way.
Do you think the NBA would fine him? I don't know.
I think using that term because the NBA is so worried about public perception that comes across as like a cuss word. So he could get fined for that.
Hmm. They'll let you swear every now and then, but if you're calling someone else a name and using the word bitch,
what's crazy is that you can do it on the court. You just can't do it off the court.
Oh, yeah.
So you could be like, you're a bitch, though, and no one's going to say a word to you. There's cursing that happens all the time on the court that gets picked up by the TVs. No one cares. But if you called the dude that in a post-game presser that's a problem? I don't know. And maybe I was wrong. Maybe he wasn't questioning his sexuality, but that's what it came across to me as.
I like it when Crowder gets into any physical altercation.
Like,
no, I just think it's fun. I just think it's great to watch. And you know they're not going to fight. We always
talk
like about
James. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's true.
I've told you guys, there's a real history there. He doesn't like James, and he's not afraid to
so
tell
James
him about
Harden
it.
Is sitting back laughing at this whole situation.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I should have pushed him into the first row.
Right.
Hate James to break this, Barry, either. For your
Nostradamus
prediction.
Ain't happening.
It's bad news. Luka Doncic has retweaked the ankle that last time had him out 11 days. Well, chances of him playing tomorrow night in Houston, not good.
That's right. They ain't making the seventh seed, but they gave it the old college try. Yeah. They tried to make me look good.
You know what?
They're still sitting at six.
You still got a shot.
And lost 4-6.
If Clint...
I mean, Russ, lost six of their last 10.
If Clint, Russ, and James play last night, Dallas got a good shot. We'll be back. It's the usual suspects. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.